SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, and a not-so-great Wednesday for music fans. And virtually anyone that is standing idly and helplessly as people we know, people we don't know but admire from afar, and people who are friends and family of people we do know are claimed by this insidious disease. There's two things I've got to do here in this opening segment, and from the horse racing side, we'll spend plenty of time this morning looking at yesterday's Fawner force out that instantly provoked frustration, annoyance, anger, etc., with a DQ that absolutely could have gone as a non-call and let things stand. Seth Merrill later, and Seth's always has a great way to evaluate. I've always liked Seth's Insta read on objections and inquiries. Seth instantly thinks to himself, well, this is 50-50. This is 60-40 for no call. This is 70-30 for takedown. I'm going to guess that Seth's number on this might have been, 30 for takedown, 70 for leave alone. That feels about right. And I some of you that follow, I said, it's a DQ that you can marginally understand. It happens on a very difficult spot where the head-on and the pan do not give you exactly what you need. But they put up Taylor's Prince, and that, instantly people, I suppose if this had happened somewhere else in the sequence, people might not have been as aghast and as annoyed. But to be honest, later in the sequence, you had the last two legs. You had two very difficult horses. So it's not as if, I was taken down and, then a couple of chalky results and you think, I would, if it doesn't happen, I'm a winner. And it not so fast, because the last two winners, the one that I did fine with Indy and Roses, and Nick Tamaro told you to be aware of Frankly Fun. And those two big prices really put the spurs to this sequence, and it ends up paying $8,400. So first of all, congratulations to those of you that hit. And some of you may have had the two on your ticket, Taylor Prince, and maybe you owe Chris Fackler, a salute, kind of standing up. I don't blame in the least Dakota Wood. And Dakota Wood is one of the, one of the better riders at Fawner. And nobody's obligated on the lead. We'll talk to Tony Black probably about this tomorrow. John White later, so we'll have another steward viewpoint. Chris Katulak, by the way, is going to join us after the first break. And Chris will discuss the decision. And read from the stewards report. I want to address the stewards thing in a second. But I'm always mystified when a horse like this on the lead gets taken down for, you know, for basically tightening things up on somebody that's trying to come up inside them. You know, we talk a lot, and also listen, we talk about drifting out and, you know, the herding that goes on. That's a lot more subtle. If a horse tries to go to your outside and you just keep drift and make it as hard for that horse to pass you on the inside, it always seems to be more egregious and there's more visual to it. But I you know, for my part, from my view, I'm in the stand. I'd leave where's Rufus up. I see people saying, he drew off. Well, yeah, he drew off because the horse that was his prime foe in the setting, you know, almost came to a complete stop. I mean, don't for a minute pretend that when that happened on the turn, you didn't say to yourself as you were watching, and I said it to myself, I said, ugh, there's going to be an inquiry here. And, you know, then immediately, and I do want to ask Chris that, because I did not see where, and I was watching on the laptop as opposed to TV. I didn't see where they lit the inquiry lamp. I only saw the objection light up. I don't know if they added the inquiry or not, but anyway, you knew immediately. And then when the thing was not dismissed quickly, you knew they were debating it. And, you know, they kept looking at the pan. The pan is actually more useful than the head on, because it literally is in that blind spot that's impossible to see. So the other thing I want to mention about the stewards, for people saying, oh, Fawner, this is why this is a C track and I'll never. Don't pretend for a second that we haven't had calls very similar to this at the biggest racetracks in the country, because we have. So that part of it is just ridiculous. And if you somehow think that the stewards, that the Nebraska stewards are people that they picked up off the street, you'd be wrong about that too. You're talking about Bob Pollock, who has been in the game his entire life. Those of you in Texas know him from the founding of Retama, and he ran Retama for 15 years. There's nothing he hasn't done in the game. Bob Pollock is as respected a steward as there is amongst the steward community. Dennis Kochever, who's been around 25 or 30 years in the steward stand, and Doug Schaff, who's the racing secretary, and another guy that's been in the stand and has been on the racetrack. These are not people that are inexperienced and don't know what they're looking at, etc. In fact, I think Doug was a jockey actually early on. But Bob Pollock, who's the state steward, and that's the other thing. One is a state steward, and then two are Fawner appointees. Yeah, that's different in every jurisdiction. But anyway, don't think that the people that were looking at that replay didn't know what they were looking at, because they're highly experienced. And Bob Pollock, I was at Arizona this year. He received the Pete Peterson Award, lifetime achievement as an official. So I just, you know, that part of it, you disagree with the call. You think it was terrible and great. We discussed this on Monday after Oaklawn and the takedown of Winning Impression. That could have stood, from that standpoint, I mean, I got put up with Finnick the Fierce for decent money, and okay, and here, you know, my pick five tickets were instantly dead. I didn't have Taylor's Prince on any tickets. So you just have to roll with these. You can't, you know, you just, I, you know, I wasn't surprised. I would have left Where's Rufus up. And I think that call, you know, if you just had the visual of it, you didn't know the circumstances, you know, I think probably, like I said, 70-30. Well, see what Seth says. That's his, I love his measurement, the way he does the percentage of staying up or taking down. And to me, I think that horse probably stays up 7 out of 10 times. In this case, they take him down. That's it. So we'll discuss it more. We'll get the Nick Tamaro is going to be in here in the hour. We'll do the Tampa $80,000 pick 5 carryover today. You know, Gus looked at it. I have not had a chance to really handicap it in detail. I just gave it a tacit glance. Chris Katulak first to address specifically the DQ. And in terms of money bet, $3.5 million came in. Unbelievable. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. John White, I mentioned. And actually, I'm glad that we didn't get to John Monday or Tuesday because he can provide his steward's view of things. Seth, and we expect to talk to Andrew Hawkins for that Australia glance. So that, I can't even, I'm certainly not going to call that a happy recap, but, you know, that's the horse portion to get things started. My reference to the passings and whether they've been COVID related or not, there's just been, a steady, relentless supply of sadness. And, you know, some of them, you know, we talked to on Monday with Johnny, for instance, you know, the Tom Dempsey, and that was COVID, although he was suffering from dementia. And then a very personal athlete yesterday, Timmy Brown, who literally was the first sports star, the first professional athlete that was my favorite player. Philadelphia Eagles, and I can recall the two. I was, I think, 7 when he ran 2 kickoffs back for touchdowns in 1 game, first player in NFL history to do it. Johnny was at the game at Franklin Field. And I just, number 22, kickoff returns and in the backfield and a breakaway runner, and a fascinating person, too. He and his brother were orphans, and ultimately Timmy Brown, you know, Philadelphia took him in, and gave him a home and a community leader in Philly as well. And that news came mid-afternoon, and then hours later, last evening, I had told you the other day that John Prine was fighting for his life in Nashville at Vanderbilt. And COVID claims John Prine. We're going to listen to 6 or 7 John Prine cuts, some with him, most him singing. But John Prine, a talent. That was just revered and admired by all his contemporaries. When you talk about Springsteen and Bob Dylan and Tom Petty and Kris Kristofferson essentially discovered John Prine, but a songwriter, singer-songwriter, and artist that just it was unique and brilliant and. Yeah, he physically was really a candidate to be claimed by this. He had had cancer and had had some other health issues, and he and his wife Fiona, I guess, had come back from Europe and basically was following this, you know, via her, tweeting and letting fans know, and it really is heartbreaking. And then on a personal, you know, to bring it closer, as if it isn't affecting enough to see all of this suffering. We're hearing, you know, from friends, you know, Tom Amos, his father, who was ill himself the last few years, was in failing health in his mid-90s, but ultimately a victim of this. Tom Morley and Maggie, Tom Morley's one of his shed captains, Martin Zapata, if you didn't see yesterday, you know, the first specific passing COVID-related in on the backstretch in New York. And Tina was devastated yesterday, too, at news that really kind of a friend of racing in a lot of ways, Norden Said, who had been a New York City policeman who grew up in Hoosick Falls, who Tina went to high school with, and who was a bodyguard for the likes of Beyonce and Jay-Z. And Norden and his mother taken by this. And we would see Norden at Saratoga a couple of times a summer and a lot of times at Belmont. He brought Jay-Z, I think it was one of the Triple Crown tries. He was there with Jay-Z and others too. I mean, other Broadway and musicians and you know, film stars. He was a top bodyguard and a very sweet guy. So, I mean, this is just, it's just invading and it's just I mean, ultimately it feels like there's nobody that will not be affected by this. So you just hope that you know, we get over the top of this curve and it starts to wane, but you know, there's really just so much heartbreak you can take in a lot of ways. But I fear that we got more. Meantime, we continue to make the best of it and continue to try to enjoy what we all do about racing and be just thankful that even this, you know, half a dozen ovals that are able to continue can keep us, you know, suitably distracted. We're going to start out with John Prine, and as we've done so often, Casey and I together, listening to cuts, in some cases we're going to listen to full songs, no commercials today at all, just John Prine music to make you feel better if you were a Prine fan, and so many of you, because I hear from so many people that are, you know, that appreciate good and interesting music and artists. And if you didn't know John Prine, you'll recognize a few songs, probably including this first one. He helped make Bonnie Raitt's career. And let's start off the morning.
Like
Angel from Montgomery.
I had a friend of mine who wrote this next song, John Prine.
This old house would have burnt down a long time ago.
just give me one thing I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
When I was a young girl, you had me a cowboy. You weren't much to look at. Flow back like a broken down dam.
Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living. Just a hard way to go.
Kitchen. I can hear them buzzing, and I ain't done nothing since I woke up today.
How the hell can a person go to work in the morning, come home in the evening, and have nothing to say?
Bonnie Raitt, and really a song that helped really familiarize her to all of us. But John Prine, who also you can hear plenty of editions of it with him, you know, solo. And we can do a little bit of both. I think we'll hear Clay Pigeons, which he did not write, but is certainly, you know, one of his signature songs. And then a song that is a signature of his, Sam Stone, but the version done by Swamp Dog is arguably, you know, best known and unbelievable. And so much of Prine's catalog, especially early on, you know, a lot of anti-war, you know, anti-Vietnam and the human condition, essentially, and, you know, the timing of his passing, obviously, given everyone's situation and the isolation of, and in fact, I think we'll probably close with a song that is precisely about isolation later this morning when we listen to Hello in There, John Prine. Chris Katulak joins us from Fonner Park, and certainly wish that didn't have to deal with a steward's decision as part of yesterday's fun and exciting pick five sequence. We had so much fun handicapping it and playing it, and visit yesterday actually was really enjoyable with Mike Jacobowski from Dinsdale, and who's also the president of Foner. But obviously, you know, people get taken down in DQ calls, and their ire is going to be directed at the stewards and at the facility. And Chris, you know, first of all, congratulations on an amazing day, probably the most remarkable day in Foner Park history. I'm sorry you had to deal with this.
Well, thank you, Steve. And first and foremost, I want to thank you for agreeing to have me come on to your show this morning. When I asked you yesterday, when I could see what was happening throughout the course of the day. Double-edged sword, no question about that, regarding the big day. $7.2 million was bet at Foner Park. They bet $3.6 million into the carryover of already close to $500,000. So there was $4.1 million to be divvied up in that pick five, and I guess that's why we're talking. And Steve, I have a couple of points I want to mention, and I don't want to dig in too much, so I'll try to come up for air periodically here. But I do want to say, just to start off, that nothing I can say or do is going to return the money to the gamblers who lost their wagers. So I'm kind of doomed in whatever else may come out of my mouth. But the DQ was harsh, and people should be angry. I understand that as a horse player. And I want you to also know, I don't intend to make any glib remark or treat this controversial call in any lighthearted manner. And I think that's an example of me asking to be on your show right now. It's all about communication, Steve.
No, and people appreciate it. I hope they do. And they don't have to agree with the call. But, you know, there are a couple of parameters. I touched on a few, you know, right off the break, including the viability and the respect of the three people in this stand. I one of the things I see, you know, in Twitter, anybody with a keyboard can say whatever they want, and that's I guess that's fine. But nobody's going to question the quality of these stewards. I mean, you don't have to agree with the decision, but Bob Pollack, Dennis Kochever, and Doug Schaaf are lifelong racetrackers with real experience. These aren't people that were pulled out of the stands to be put into the steward stand.
They certainly are not Johnny come latelys in the business. There's no question of that. They are part of what make my job easy, because they handle all the racing operations. Without, I know everything's going to take place that needs to take place in order for the race to be run. And I'm going to read you the steward's report, but I want to say before and maybe afterwards that I talked to Bob and the rest of the stewards last night, talked to Bob before I came into work this morning. I've been here for a couple hours already. Beautiful sunrise over Foner Park this morning. And he said, Chris, you know, I really hate the position that this has put you into. And I said, Bob, it's part of my job. It's part of your job. That's what part of being a CEO and part of being a steward is about. And, you know, he felt bad for me and sympathetic, but that's the way it goes. So let me jump into what the stewards told me, Steve, in both their written report and then what they verbally expressed to me. In the written report, they cite Nebraska State Racing Commission Rule 17.002.01, and it reads, when clear, a horse may be taken to any part of the course, but no horse shall cross or weave in front of other horses in such a way as to impede them or constitute or cause interference or intimidation. Now, that's Nebraska statute. That's in the horse racing laws of the Racing Commission. And then there, what they also said in their written report was, and they use horse numbers rather than horse names, but they say number seven, and number seven, of course, that was Where's Rufus, and number two is Taylor's Prince. Where's Rufus was disqualified, but number seven was off the rail, number two was making a move inside of number seven. Number two got up on the inside. Number seven came across and caused interference. Number two had to take up sharply. And that was in their written report that they gave to me. Now, I'll express to you some of the things we had in our dialogue. I asked them, did you have any issues making that decision based on the video that you saw, the head-on shot and the pan shot? And they said, no, they didn't. I asked them this also. I asked them, was it unanimous or not? And they said it was a unanimous decision by the steward. And I want you to know, when stewards are watching a race here at Fawner, there's one steward that watches the TV, and then the other two are watching the race while it's going. So I know the race replay has been looked at time and time again. And unfortunately, people look at race replays in slow motion. This is my little axe to grind here. Races are not run in slow motion. They're run in real time, and real time decisions have to be made. And I know that these stewards have a part of their decision, and all the expertise they have is that they saw what they saw in real time, and I think that factored into their decision as well. Let me say one more thing, Steve, and then I'll let you hop in here. The stewards made no mention in their report that the rider of number 7 complained that he was run into from the flank or behind by the number 2. And I think that's what many of us saw, was the 7 was in front, he was off the rail, here comes the 2 along the inside, there's this, I'll call it a collision or coming together, and some people thought that the 2 had actually just driven right up into the 7 to kind of create his own way to come through, but the rider of the 7 made no complaint of that in the steward's report. So I'll kind of stop for now with that and take any more questions.
Let me ask you, the objection went up first. Did you ask them, did they ever put up the inquiry light?
Do you know what? I don't know that. I was in the tote room at the time conveying the mutual numbers or the handle numbers to our guy in video control over the phone. We had to kind of do that old school wise. So I did not ever see the tote board. I'm sorry about that. And I don't know in the report that they say a steward's made an inquiry or rider objection, so I apologize for that. But they certainly were looking at it. There's no question of that.
Well, because even in the – who writes the charts, by the way?
That's Equibase, the chart caller. And by the way, I'd like to – the stewards don't do that, of course.
No.
I'd like to read to you the footnotes if you haven't read that already. May I?
Sure.
Okay, so – and in the footnotes, they use horse names, so I'll give you the name and the number. So it starts off, Where's Rufus, who was the 7, who was disqualified. Where's Rufus was on the pace from the 2 or 3 path to edge clear into the far turn. Came in nearing the lane to put Taylor's Prince, that's a 2 horse, in tight, kicked clear and held daylight to the wire. The second sentence is, Taylor's Prince showed early speed inside Where's Rufus, settled back in the far turn, rallied back along the rail nearing the lane, and was forced to check as that rival came in and could not recover. Now, this is a chart caller's remark, who is to be as unbiased as the stewards are as well, and that was his perspective and his report on the race.
Well, and I will say, much as as many races as we all watch, and particularly when it comes to this kind of an incident, this is the single most difficult place on the racetrack to get a complete video presentation of the incident. And it's funny, because when it happened live, I said to myself, they're going to end up looking at this. And then, then the race finishes. And then when they started to show it, the first time they showed it in a replay, I thought, oh, that kid kind of ran up on his ass. But then later on, after the sequence, after the whole, later on last night at about 9 o'clock, and I was watching it, repeatedly on the replay, there is absolutely, ahead of the incident, there is no doubt that Chris Fackler has got Taylor's Prince's head and neck into and past, basically filling up that opening past the hip and the flank. It's absolutely clear. And I now at the same time, I do not blame Dakota Wood an ounce for then just basically, you know, keeping a straight line at that point, you know, as you're turning and shutting him off. I mean, who thinks that a jock on the lead, wait till Tony Black is on tomorrow and Tony tells you that kid, you know, by all rights, Fackler's lucky that Wood didn't put him over the rail. And you know, that's the thing that as players we're like, you know, if those of us that had Where's Rufus are saying, damn right, you should close the door there. I'm sure that Mark Hibden would have been annoyed if Wood, you know, leaves open that gap. So I that part of it, the race riding part of it, is what I think a lot of our minds, you know, do in these circumstances. But the reality is Fackler had a head in there.
Exactly.
That opening was there. And I completely, for me, it's a 70-30. I would leave the 7 out of 10 times, to me, you leave the winner up. 3 out of the 10, you DQ. And I that's my view of it.
Okay. And so I would call it a 60-40, but the point
okay.
is, I didn't think it was a slam dunk, and that's what's brought us to this point. But I have to say one other note that the stewards mentioned to me in my dialogue with them last night was the two had room to be up in there because he was in there. And I think that's what you're saying. He was already there, and then the 7 came over on him. That's what the steward said. That's what the chart caller said. That's what you just said. So he was in there, and then he came over on him. And I said it in my tweet. It was harsh. It was controversial. It's all of that. And, you know, I guess I want to say something also here, you know, just to stay in contact. The horse players feel aggrieved by stewards across the world on a weekly, if not a daily basis. And years ago, I was talking to a steward down at Oaklawn Park, and he told me that he felt, in the mind of horse players and horsemen, the best a steward could do was be right 50% of the time. Those aren't good numbers. But, you know, a steward is not, in my mind, they're not supposed to try to win a popularity contest. They're supposed to go out there and make the right decision. And does the right decision make everybody happy all the time? Well, of course not. Does the right decision happen all the time? Well, there's arguments that can be made that maybe it doesn't. Was this one of those situations? Yeah, probably was. But, you know, was it an unfortunate aspect in the intense limelight that Fauner Park is in right now? Of course. Did I want this to occur? Of course not. Was this the crime of the century? I say of course not also. Although, we're under the microscope right now with nothing else to look at, and the keyboard cowboys did come out, as we all know, and they all will. And, you know, I don't read those remarks. You read about two or three words into the tweet, you can kind of figure out what direction that they're going. And I want to say one more thing, Steve, and then I'll come up for air here. You know, in my tweet last night, I said there was a controversial DQ in the fourth race today. I intend on addressing that after I received the steward's report after the races, which I did. And then I said, I, however, will not address any piggish tweets. I'll respond to the harsh call later tonight. I appreciate your patience. And the funny thing was that the people who were offended by the piggish tweets remark, only the piggish people that made those tweets are the ones that took offense to that. The other people that were just angry and expressing their anger, but doing it in a somewhat respectable manner, those people didn't offend. So the biggest tweeters came to the top, I guess, and identified themselves. So that was kind of interesting there. But
well, you're gonna, listen, this is a game of strong opinions.
And of course.
There's passion here. The one part of this that I wanted to stress early on, and I think I did, we'll talk to Nick Tamaro next. We'll get John White's take. And John, of course, an accredited steward has been practicing forever. And so we'll get his, and then we'll get Tony tomorrow. I didn't like the notion and the you know, people saying, well, this is what you get from, you know, from a C, you know, from a C track.
And
that's what I get for playing a place like this.
Yeah.
It's just not fair. For starters, the other thing, in fact, Johnny DeSantis just sent me a note and I should have brought it up already. People have to understand too. This is a 5/8 track. This is a bull ring.
And
there's parts of, you know, for those of you that don't, you know, that don't play the 5/8 tracks, these are tight turns. And, you know, depending on the banking and, you know, there's a lot going on that front. So, you know, people are, I understand people saying, well, this wouldn't have happened at New York and Florida and California. Easy.
So it's the people have many people haven't seen 5/8 mile racing.
That's true.
You know, as their fair, and when you've got a field of 10 horses, and especially in a half mile race going around one turn, but 10 horses on a 5/8 mile racetrack where you're about every furlong you're taking a turn. You know, there's a lot of reaching and grabbing and pulling and adjusting and people coming over and screaming. You should hear them come into the first turn. I clench up every time I see it. And it, for me as a race caller, here's a little anecdote. I called races here at Fauner Park a lifetime ago for 10 years, from 1986 to 1995. And when I left and started calling races on a mile racetrack, it was the difference in like sitting in the back seat of a plane and then getting upgraded to coach. All of a sudden, everything was smoother. It's like, oh, wow, look at this. It's so much easier to call these races because it's not rock 'em, sock 'em. And one more thing I have to say. These people that every race, oh, that horse was stiffed, or there's the fixer's on and there's race fixing. That is such horse racing 101 that is immature that hopefully anybody that follows racing grows out of that notion and evolves as a horse player, because that is so ridiculous when every race that's run, somebody's, you know, saying there was a fix on the race. That's the stuff that I just can't tolerate, and no one should.
Chris, I appreciate you doing this. I'm sorry that it happened and that certain percentage are going to be frustrated by it. But it, you know, a certain percentage were frustrated at Oaklawn the other day when with Winning Impression being taken down. And, you know, as I say so often with these, you just hope that, you know, when you face the big steward in the sky, that you came out, you know, a couple dollars ahead, lifetime on steward calls. It's part of the game.
Yeah, when you get on that airplane trip, you're under the controls of the pilot. Whatever that pilot wants to do or his crew are going to do to you, it's their orders. It's like making a bet at the races as well. Steve, you're a gentleman. You're a terrific knight and leader of horse racing, and I appreciate this. I'm sorry it happened too, as well. There were 640,000 tickets alive after that disqualification, and when it all came down to it, I think just over 200 had the winning $16,000 in the pick, Dinsdale late pick five. So, thank you, one and all, and I appreciate everyone having an open mind to this. And I understand they are upset.
Chris Katulak, everybody, Fauner Park back at it this afternoon. Fauner and Tampa and. And Will Rogers, your action today, and we appreciate Chris visiting and offering to come and kind of flesh out the details around last night's race for DQ. Let's listen here to one of John Prine's performances, not of one of his own songs, but Blaze Foley's Clay Pigeons, and Nick Tamaro joins us after this.
Going down to the Greyhound station, gonna buy a ticket to ride. I'm gonna find that lady with two or three kids and sit down by her side. a ride till the sun comes up and down around about two or three times. Smoking cigarettes in the last seat, sing the song for the people to meet and get along with it all. Where the people say, y'all, I sing a song with a friend, change the shape that I'm in, and get back in the game and start playing again. I'd like to stay, but I might have to go to start over again. I might go back down to Texas or go to somewhere that I've never been. Get up in the morning and go out at night, and I won't have to go home. Get used to being alone. Change the words to this song and start singing again. Questions that I already know. I could build me a castle with memories just to have somewhere to go. Count the days and the nights that it takes to get back in the saddle again. Feed the pigeons some clay. Turn the night into day. And start talking again when you know what to say. Sit down by her side. A ride till the sun comes up and down around about two or three times. Smoking cigarettes in the last seat. Sing my song for the people to meet and get along with it all. Where the people say, oh, feed the pigeons some clay. Turn the night into day. Start talking again when you know what to say.
John Prine doing Blaze Foley's Clay Pigeons. Nick Tamro joining us now. Nick, good morning.
Morning.